Farmer for Azure Deployments with Isaac Abraham.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and to run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything that the .NET ecosystem has to offer. This podcast is sponsored by ClearMeasure, a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. ClearMeasure is hiring architects as well as .NET engineers who'd like a path to become an architect. You can go to clearmeasure.com/careers for that. And if you have a comment or question for the show, send me an email at podcast@palermo.network. Also, my new online TV show has launched. You can search for, quote, Programming with Palermo in any of the podcast directories or YouTube. And you can also find it on www.palermo.network. My guest today on the show is Isaac Abraham, and he's a .NET MVP and a .NET developer since .NET 1.0 over 20 years ago, with an interest in cloud computing and distributed data problems. He's the author of Git Programming with F Sharp and is the director of Compositional IT. He specializes in consultancy, training, and development, helping customers adopt high-quality, functional-first solutions on the .NET platform. Isaac, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
Fine, thanks. Thanks for having me, Jeffrey. Great to be here.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. I'm really intrigued by your work in the Azure space with deployments using Farmer. But before we get into that, I want to kind of ask you more about your background. You've been doing .NET for a long time since it's been out. But even before that, what was it that kind of got you into software development, and what are the pinnacle turning points in your career leading up to this point?
That's a good question. I guess I've always had an interest in computers, but I basically went to uni, did a degree in kind of computer. It wasn't computer science, but it was computing, I guess. It wasn't so math heavy. It was really programming intensive. Yeah. It was basically all the modules were about, you know, programming different languages, analysis and design. It was really geared up towards actually teaching you to be a software developer. In some ways, you know, when I sit with other people that have done computer science degrees and they're talking about, you know, big O notation and all the kind of, you know, red, black trees and stuff like that, that's kind of going at the edge of my sort of expertise. But at the other end, when I came out of uni, I was able to, like, you know, I was working in software development almost from day one sort of thing. Mm-hmm. That was kind of just a natural thing when I finished uni, was to go straight into software dev. And I was kind of, I guess at the time I joined like a national bank, they were kind of enterprise-y, you know, but .NET was just coming out then. So I'd spent like a year or two doing like C and C++. Mm-hmm. And .NET 1.0 was just on the horizon then. It was just around 2003, something like this. Yep. And, you know, that was the big thing in the company. We're all moving from Visual Basic and C to .NET and C Sharp. And then like any enterprise, after like a couple of years, they sort of said, oh, no, we're going to go with Java or something else. And I'd spent like the last 2 years learning C Sharp and getting all excited about it. And I was so excited I basically moved company to find a .NET consultancy. And I really mm-hmm. just wanted to work in a small place where I could cut my teeth and really, you know, learn hands-on doing .NET development. And I've basically been doing that pretty much ever since. And yeah, thanks a lot for mentioning it's been 20 years since .NET 1.0 came out. But it's a long time now. And it has changed a lot, the landscape. I was just thinking about this the other day, like just how different things are in .NET today with like .NET Core compared to, you know, it was .NET was basically a thing that came with Visual Studio in the early days.
Right.
That really was what it was. You had to install Visual Studio to get to .NET, and it was like Windows only and everything. And it's just a much more attractive option, I think, nowadays. And we certainly see that with customers of ours that are coming from, you know, Python and JavaScript and all sorts of other languages onto .NET now, which I think years ago might not have been the case, really. But I guess my journey has been almost, yeah, developer and contracting and consulting for probably 10 or 15 years or so. And I got into Azure in the early days. I worked in a cloud consultancy. They're a big data consultancy. And that was in the early days of Azure. Like, I don't know how long you've been doing it, but like the early version of the portal, like when it was basically just you had, I think,
07 or 09
version. Yeah, probably like the, I think you had SQL. No, you didn't even have SQL then. You had storage and you had cloud services
and compute.
And not much more than that, really, you know, before the Silverlight portal, even.
Right.
So really early days. But I got into it then and it was like super cool. You could see the promise of it, but it was like, you know, there was a lot of work you had to go through. And interestingly, even then I was working on like deployments of like, you know, can we deploy cloud compute services through code? Mm-hmm. And it was so painful in those days. You know, you had these kind of secret APIs that weren't documented and it was really difficult. And then obviously, you know, things like ARM templates came out and so on and so forth. But yeah, it's, since you've actually asked me, it's just reminded me just how primitive some of the, like, you know, if you wanted to programmatically work with Azure in those days, it was really hard. And it's a lot, lot better today, thankfully.
Almost impossible from a practical standpoint.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, you've been doing consulting so long. I often describe consulting as experience in dog years, where because you see so many other customer organizations, your perspective, you get to participate, and you tell me what it seems like, you get to participate in so many more different problem sets per year than working inside a single company's IT department. Have you found that to be true for yourself?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, we're still a relatively small company, but yeah, we still get that. And it's almost not just the technology side that you learn from, but it's the organizational challenges that you face that are almost as interesting, if not more, because they're just so varied in terms of culture and in terms of things that the organizations, you know, struggle with or not. And I'm a big believer that you almost learn from mistakes a lot better than, you know, when projects don't go well, you probably learn a lot more lessons than when everything just works smoothly, because you can almost then say, right, you know, this thing didn't work. Next time we don't do that. It must be one of the other options out there. And it kind of just reduces the chance of you making that same mistake again. But we kind of do a bit of a mixture of, like, yeah, I'd say, you know, consultancy and advisory services, but also development, you know, web apps and, you know, with SQL databases or, you know, distributed applications in Azure. Mm-hmm. So we kind of do the bits where a bit more hands off and it's more, let's sit with some existing technical teams and help them do the right thing. But also customers that have no internal IT capabilities whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And it's more like, we don't know what to do. Can you help us optimize our business process kind of thing? And there's certainly a consultative element there. And it's some ways that's even more challenging because you're often dealing with people that have just gotten very limited technical, you know, understanding, the same way that when, you know, if I need to call a plumber out, I just don't know what to say to them.
Like, or what to,
you know,
ask
your them. Life is in my hands. Please do the right thing.
Well, let's talk about Azure deployments and specifically Farmer. And we'll put the website in the show notes. compositionalit.github.io/farmer is the main website. And so we'll have that in the show notes. And it's for people using ARM templates or maybe in lieu of ARM templates. But just tell us why Farmer, how it came about, what problem made it need to come about.
Yeah. So probably worth rewinding in like, 2 or 3 years where, you know, even for, this was when this was before Bicep even was a thing.
Which is still new.
Which is still relatively new, exactly. It's still quite new. So we had ARM templates and we were using them for most of our customers. You know, we're big fans of, you know, repeatable deployments and, you know, the ability to create, you know, dev test live, you know, environments that you don't have that issue of got to go into the portal and click around. And then 6 months later, you need to create a second environment. And then you're too afraid to touch the old one. And, you know, that whole thing. So we were using ARM templates, but it was, I'll be honest, we just found it way too expensive from a time point of view to actually make a template that we could go from zero to a running environment. Mm-hmm. Almost impossible. Like if you wanted to create a storage account and connect it to a web app, even to like get the connection string out of the storage account and put it into the settings of an app service, it's like you need to look on like 7 different websites and spend an hour trying this and that. And then it was like the secret command that you know, not particularly well documented. Mm-hmm. And to me, that felt like, you know, the most obvious thing that someone's going to want to do. I've got a storage account or a SQL database. How do I configure my application to use it? And the documentation isn't, still to my mind, is not great. It's not clear where you look. There's like the GitHub, like, I think it's called like GitHub 101 sort of sample sort of website that Microsoft have done, but it's obviously more than 101. But like, there's that. And then there's the official sort of the specs of the ARM templates. But some of that is contradictory to some other bits you'll see. Then you've got Stack Overflow, where you've got different people saying different things as well there. Mm-hmm. Then you've got blogs from Microsoft guys and girls saying different things as well. And it was like, there was no one place to say like, here's how you do these kind of basic recipes. You know, I wanted to really lower the barrier to entry. That was really the goal. Make it easy to do the right thing to create repeatable deployments. And to me, like, ARM templates just weren't there.
Now, we're assuming here, correct me if I'm wrong, we're assuming here infrastructure as code, where in order to do a deployment, we are creating some type of service in Azure, as opposed to just click, 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 creating it, and then just using it over and over again, right? We're assuming, Absolutely. Okay, we're in the problem space of we're going to create this for the first time or drop and recreate it or another environment. Yeah. And so we have to use what Azure gives us, whether command line, whether ARM template, whether any of the number, any of the other, because there's other options out there too, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we would see was customers would just like, yeah, we'd love to do that, Isaac, but it's just too much work to use ARM templates or the client. So we'll just do point and click in the portal and we'll have to just pay that cost when it comes to it. Or mm-hmm. we'll use Visual Studio, right click publish. And, you know, we'll publish again to another environment and hope we get it right the second time. And I wanted to try and encourage our customers to, or to do it for them and say, look, you know, we can spin up this environment and then you can have three environments. And if you need to redeploy it, you know, that's no big problem because you've got this infrastructure as code. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It was about pushing that infrastructure as code, which I think is the right way of doing it. For sure, you know, you can source control it and you can version it and everything. Absolutely. It just wasn't easy to do. So that was the initial kind of impetus for Farmer. I almost started it as just an internal kind of hobby project. Like, we had one customer that we just wanted to do something fairly simple. You know, it was something like I said before, probably create an app service with a storage account and hook them together. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of, let's just create a simple, you know, a bit of code that lets me do that. And then I started sort of seeing how might that work. And we ended up, I think, with a nice solution. And it's almost a similar kind of principle to what Bicep have adopted, which is, it's not quite the same, but effectively, if you think about what Bicep does, you write code in Bicep and that gets then out emitted into ARM. You can't always, you don't really see that at the end of the day because Bicep's got its own command line tool, but that's really what it's doing behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. It's going from Bicep into ARM and then the ARM template is getting deployed. And that's really what Farmer does, in that you write .NET code and when you run the tool, it generates an ARM template for you.
Now on the website, you have an example of an ARM template, which what has 100 and something lines of code. And then the Farmer equivalent is what, 20 something yeah. lines of code. So
yeah.
walk us through exactly what is Farmer. Is Farmer just another format in JSON, or how do people use it?
Yeah, so Farmer is actually an F#. So it's just a .NET application. And you could theoretically do it in C# as well. But F# is a really nice language in that it's quite kind of, it's flexible and it's quite nice for building DSLs, like domain-specific languages. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I actually ended up going with Farmer was it looks kind of JSON-esque, the way that we've designed Farmer. So if you like look at the sample, you've got like curly braces and these key value pairs and so on. But it's actually really just, if you come from a C# background, it's almost really like classes and Fluent APIs that we're creating there, like types, but it doesn't look quite like that. What we really wanted to do was to optimize for what we thought was like the most common situations that people are doing. So let's say you're creating an app service. 9 times out of 10, you want an App Insights instance associated with it. So what we said was, well, fine. Every time you create an app service, we will create an App Insights instance out of the box without you even asking for it. Mm. And we'll configure it together. So you run your app and it's all automatically got the instrumentation key logged in. And it just works out of the box. So a lot of things like that we wanted to make easy. We wanted to make it easy to combine and compose resources. Like in the sample on the website, you can say like storage account.key. And that boils down into that uber complicated ARM that no one can remember to get you that key property of the storage account connection string sort of thing. So, you know, those lines of ARM that you're seeing on like the homepage, they emit into like the whole shebang of like a web app in Farmer. is like a service plan and a web app. Mm-hmm. And we create the two of them. We default it to a B1, for example, you know, with always on, and you can override that later. But we try to make it a bit more, someone who wants to look at ARM or Azure from more of, you know, when you go to like, I want to create a new app service in Azure, mm-hmm. and you've got the wizard that takes you through it in the portal.
Yep.
It kind of takes you through that you need a service plan and you need an app service. Whereas when you're doing it with ARM, you have to know that yourself. You have to know, oh, I've got to create a service plan. Now I have to create a web app. I have to connect the two together and make them dependent on one another. So ARM creates them in the right order. And we wanted to just sort of abstract that away and just say, I want a web app. I don't really care about the distinction between service plans or server farms and app service. I just want a web app. Here's my zip file. Please deploy it for me with the resources already made. Mm-hmm. So it was very much that kind of a much more higher level way of thinking, really, but not stepping away from the low level tooling that is ARM templates. So we still wanted to piggyback on top of that service that Microsoft gives you, but maybe with a slightly nicer development experience to start with.
Okay. Sometimes when running ARM templates with the, say, Octopus Deploy or Azure Pipelines, a subsequent step needs the key or needs a piece of information. Does Farmer kind of output those variables back into the pipeline?
Yep. So you can basically say, I want to run this deployment, and here are my outputs. This storage account's key, and put it into a key called storage account key, whatever you want. Sure. And so you can then, yeah, absolutely. So you might have downstream code that's running that needs the outputs of the ARM deployment. Absolutely.
And since it's a NuGet package, right? Yep. And you're pulling in, you recommend an F# project to pull in that NuGet package. But since it is NuGet, does it not matter which .NET language the NuGet package is pulled into?
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery. Clear Measure is also happy to be a sponsor of the video podcast, Programming with Palermo. Watch, learn, and program alongside Chief Architect Jeffrey Palermo. Videos are added weekly and available on syndicated locations supporting video podcast or by visiting palermo.network. Tune in today.
Absolutely right, but the syntax of what you're seeing in the sample, that doesn't sort of exist in C#. So in C#, it would basically be like a class with a kind of a fluent API-esque, mm-hmm. but we've not really designed it for C#. F# got some features that C# doesn't have in terms of type system that makes it a bit safer and a bit nicer to work with. We could have said we want to make a kind of a C# specific API as well. Mm-hmm. We didn't really want to compromise on that. And to be honest, we've not yet had a customer that's using Farmer that says, I'd love to use Farmer, but you know, the syntax is too complicated, right, or anything. Right. Really not.
Okay, so best with F#. That's easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because an F# project can exist nicely in a Visual Studio solution with other C# projects.
Yep. So you can reference one from another. You can make functions in F# that you can call from C# and vice versa. So, I mean, that's one of the nice things as well, as you sort of touched on. It's just a NuGet package. So one of the things that we're actually doing with some of our customers is, imagine you've got a multi-tenant application where you're deploying resources on demand. Maybe the user's logging in and like, I need to do some work. And as part of that workload, you need to spin up a set of VMs or a set of machines, mm-hmm. but it's based on some user input on the front end of the website that you've developed. If you were to use an ARM template, you'd effectively have to like create an ARM template and splice it together by hand. But because with Farmer, it's just types and functions and data, you can almost like programmatically do that. So you can do like for each loops and anything that a normal programming language would do just natively. So you could say, you know, I want 10 storage accounts. Well, for I in 1 to 10, build me a storage account. Mm-hmm. And get all of them and then deploy them. Whereas with ARM, you sort of have to jump through hoops a little bit. And even Bicep, it makes it a bit nicer. But it's not a programming language as such, like C# or F#. And that's what to sort of take advantage of. So it, you can just fit it downstream within a, an existing app and deploy resources as part of an application itself, rather than making it a kind of, here's my app, and then my ARM templates are in a different universe. We wanted to try and bring that together.
I love it how you're unabashedly opinionated with Farmer. You have a vision for how it should be and how it's going to fit together in the most frictionless manner. Do you prefer, so if you have, like you mentioned, a web app and a storage service, and you have so many applications that are a web app and a database, you know? So do you prefer having one project that has all of the infrastructure as code for both or all the components that are deployed in the application? Or do you prefer referencing Farmer from the different applications and distributing that logic?
Part of it depends, I guess, on what your use cases are. What we tend to do is sometimes we'll build like higher level abstraction on top of what Farmer gives us for the customer. So maybe they've got a notion of, you know, this is a customer deployment. And that deployment always has a web app and a SQL and storage account. And then you kind of wrap that into your own kind of data structure, a record or a function. And then that might be distributed across, you know, different parts of our code base. It's interesting. We also go the other way. So although we're kind of opinionated and we push people down this idea of using, you know, these high level abstractions like web app, we also don't stop you going to the low level as well. Like if you want to really create a server farm and then create an app service web app and tie them together, you can do that. It's just a bit more pain if, you know, if you don't need to do that. But if you, we try to give you as many escape hatches. So if you need to break out of this kind of highly opinionated structure, you can do if you need to. But life is much better if you can stay within on the guardrails that we provide for you, if that makes sense.
Well, you have so much experience building this and knowing what works and what doesn't that, you know, unless somebody else considers themselves the same level of expert, they're probably good following your advice until they do gain that experience.
Yeah. And to be fair, I mean, if Farmer helps, you know, the 80% of devs probably out there that aren't doing any infrastructure of code and the 20% that already know how to do it are happy doing ARM templates by hand or Bicep or, you know, Terraform or whatever, then, you know, happy days. Then we're still helping that audience get on board with infrastructure as code. And maybe they get to a level where Farmer doesn't quite do what they need and they need to then really dig in deep. But for most of our customers, we don't really see that, we, you know.
Yeah. It's very intriguing that you brought up deploying a particular customer. It sounds like multi-tenancy, where you have maybe your web application, database, storage account that have to be there for the application to even start doing anything in a particular environment. But then along the way, maybe you need to add an additional service.
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
onboard a new customer.
Yeah, if every customer needs some data that's what stored in a segmented way and say, okay, let's get a different storage account per customer just so that their data is completely isolated from the other customers.
That's exactly what we've done like in the last month with one of our customers. Like every time they onboard a new customer, they need a new storage account, they need a new SQL database. It's got to be completely isolated. And it's exactly that sort of story. Yeah.
Now, I can understand running these things to create Azure services from a deployment pipeline, but does this also mean that it's just as happy running, say, behind a button click of an admin screen?
Exactly right, because it's just .NET code. So you can just run this as you would with, you know, Dapper or any other kind of .NET library. It's just the .NET library. The only, obviously, you've got to have permissions in the identity that Farmer's running in so that it can deploy an ARM template. But as long as you can get around that, then yeah, happy days.
Brilliant. I love that.
Yeah. So that's really one of the nice things. And because it's just .NET, you can build these up as you go along. It doesn't have to be like a static ARM template file, but more, I want to generate an ARM template based on these rules. Let's take one of these and generate the ARM template on the fly.
Yeah.
So it really does give you quite a lot of flexibility there.
Amazing. Now, in your run-up to creating this and maintaining it along the way, what was your thought process at the time, given you Terraform or Pulumi and some, what was your process? You know what? It doesn't make sense to me to jump to those solutions. I really want to make a programming language. Let's do Farmer instead.
I think it was two or threefold. You got to remember, Farmer is probably, over 2 years old now, I would say. So it was like Terraform was there, but we wanted to do something that was in a programming language, ideally .NET, because that's what we do. So it was kind of selfish in that regard. I didn't really think about the wider world as such. Pulumi was still in its formative stages. I think at that point, it may have only really had a JavaScript API.
Yeah,
it might have even been. So that was pretty early days there as well. Bicep didn't exist at that point as well. So we looked at what there was. And again, I didn't really think that, I mean, not that Farm is taking over the world or anything, but it's had, you know, over 150 contributors and it's got like quite a few, you know, a reasonable amount of users. And it's certainly more popular than I ever thought it would get to. I think that more shows how lacking, frankly, ARM was at the time. I mean, it was, you know, in those days, ARM didn't even really have like Visual Studio Code extension for ARM was really weak. You didn't have any IntelliSense. You didn't have any kind of syntax highlighting, really. It was like very, very difficult to author an ARM template. Mm-hmm. So frankly, I didn't have the patience to wait for that. It was, let's just start and see where it goes more than anything. And it ended up just growing and we ended up just sticking with it because it works pretty well, to be honest. And it gives us some things that you can't really get from ARM or Bicep, like the ability to call it from within a button click, as you say, and just like programmatically use it. You can't really do that easily.
Right. Well, when you get into a multi-tenant infrastructure or infrastructure per customer or whatever segmentation it is, then so many deployment tools on the market just kind of fall short because that's one capability that is not commonly a part of it. I mean,
exactly.
It doesn't even, as far as I know, our ARM templates, I don't know if there's any examples of per customer. There might be somewhere, but.
You probably have to roll it by hand. Yeah. And then it would be, you know, how do you, and we've had, to be fair, we've had some customers that even came to us and said, we're doing exactly this. And we've written our own code library to generate ARM templates based on, you know, what our users are typing in on the front end. And it's like, I wish I would have known about Farmer 3 months ago because it basically does exactly what we need.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you honed in on Farmer, or the usage of Farmer being code. Being you're using a programming language to tell it what to do as opposed to a file with a description of what should be done. And it, architecturally, it made me think of all the options that are available for SQL Server database migrations and the history of that, where there are some solutions that said, okay, this is what the database should look like. Go make it like that. And then the other, the state-based and other solutions that are migration-based that are, some of the migration base are make it look like this, but others are literal code. You write, whether it be C# or just T-SQL files, it's just code. And I tend to prefer the ones that are just code because I never hit a brick wall. I can specify exactly what I want to be done when.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, in some ways, Farmer kind of falls between both of those because it's just code, but at the end of the day, the output, it's not like the Azure CLI. When you're doing like deployments with the Azure CLI, that is very imperative, you know, create me this resource, create me that resource. Yeah. Farmer sort of is code, but the output is just an ARM template. So it's still a declarative deployment at the end of the day, but the generating of that template is code, you know, for each loops or whatever you want to build up these resources. So it's kind of a hybrid approach. In some ways, it's the best of both worlds, but in some ways, it's you're getting both sides of the fence as well. You know, you're getting both halves of that journey. I think the ability, I wish when Bicep was in its early days, I remember chatting with the team about it. And I think it's the big difference with Bicep and I think like Farmer is that Bicep is basically one-to-one with ARM templates. So what you write in Bicep, the abstractions are exactly the same as what you have with the ARM templates. It's a much nicer syntax. Mm-hmm. And the benefits of that is like every resource that is generated in ARM, like it's immediately available in Bicep. Whereas with Farmer, we basically have to handcraft these resources. But that's part of what we're trying to do is to give you this bespoke approach to like, this is the best way to create log analytics or the best way to create a SQL database that means you don't have to know all the nitty gritty. Whereas with Bicep, you still have to know I need a service plan and a web app to create an app service. So it's there's trade-offs with both approaches.
So in practical usage, how much do you find yourself still using a Azure CLI command Or are you able to do everything with Farmer?
We do use Azure Client, but ironically, it's only to deploy the templates that Farmer generates.
Okay.
Farmer is dependent on the Azure Client, so you need it installed on your machine. But basically, when you get to the end of, you know, you've built your Farmer pipeline, as it were, you then say deploy, and behind the scenes, it basically generates an ARM template, runs the Azure Client with the, you know, ARM deploy, and then passes in the name of the ARM template. So we still use the Azure Client, but we don't use it for anything other than a means to an end to get an ARM template into Azure. Anything else that we do need, we just build into Farmer. And there are some things that we even can do that go above and beyond what ARM does. So imagine you've got a web app or a functions app, and you've got code that you want to deploy with that. You know, you've got your web app and you want to deploy it into a resource. In ARM, the only way to do that is to first create a storage account, upload your zip of your app, and then deploy the ARM template and say, here's where my app is living in the other storage account, please deploy it. So you need to sort of have some resources already. And what we've taken is a slightly different approach. We've said, you don't need that. We will just basically run your ARM deployment. And then immediately after, we'll use the Azure Client to do a zip deploy for your local zip that's running on your machine. But as far as you're aware, it just looks like an atomic action. You don't realize that we're doing two AZ calls. So it just looks like this declarative document. So, you know, you might have, here's my app service, SKU, S1, you know, name, Isaac's website, and then path to zip, see local files, zip file, and deploy that template. And in reality, we're kind of splicing together then ARM template and Azure Client into one.
Okay, nice. Now, to end on,
yeah,
the name Farmer, where did it come from?
I think it was at the time we just had it originally as F-sharp ARM.
Okay.
So there's a big thing with like F-sharp. There's this sort of practice of basically taking tools from other platforms and just putting F in front of them. Mm-hmm. So like there's a tool for like, instead of make and cake, there's fake.
Fake, yeah.
And instead of, you know, mock, there's fock. And a few other things like that, where they're just taking the first letter.
That's an unfortunate one.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a few of those like that. So this was, yeah, I'll just call it Farmer. And then I thought, well, Farm doesn't sound so nice. Let's call it Farmer and then let's take the icon. There was a kind of a thought that we might take some abstractions, like you've got cattle and you've got a farm and you've got, you know, a sheepdog and things like this. We never went to that level.
Right.
But yeah, that was really all it was about. It was just, let's take ARM and put Farm at the front. Someone afterwards said, given that, you know, there was ARM and there was bicep, then you should have called it tricep or something like this.
Well, that makes sense. F-sharp, ARM, farm. Yep.
Yeah.
And you know, the IoT or the, sorry, infrastructure as code conversation in the cloud, for newer developers, it, gosh, 10 years ago, people don't talk about it so much anymore, was we used to name our servers like pets. And then with the cloud, we just kind of number them and give them a brand, kind of like a farm, you know, a ranch of cattle. And then going further with platform as a service or containers, we don't even number them. We just treat them like chickens and just count them.
Exactly. That's always been the dream of cloud, hasn't it? This kind of, you know, this ability to just have resources that you can just throw away and redeploy without having this kind of personal attachment to this particular instance of the service. Like whenever we have customers and they say, you know, we've got Azure now and we've got this functions instance and we have to use that one, I'm like, that's great news, but you really don't want to get attached to any resource. The whole point is it's commodity hardware. Throw it away, create another one, and it still should work. And
right.
Yeah.
Because Azure data centers do go down sometimes, and so your resources do have to get redeployed sometimes.
Exactly. No one likes to admit it, but it does happen. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, Azure's pretty good about automatically redeploying them for you in a lot of cases, but they still get recreated.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the Azure DevOps podcast and telling us all about Farmer for Azure deployments. Really intriguing. We'll include all the links in the show notes, and I know that I'm going to try it out. It looks so much easier than using ARM templates, which I've used for years and years. So thanks so much, Isaac.
No worries. Thanks for having me on. And both for yourself and your listeners, if you guys have got any questions, you can always hit me up on Twitter or on email. Always happy to help and answer any questions.
Awesome. Fantastic.
Brilliant.
And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.